Hi everyone, welcome to the weekly question and answer session for members of the Personal Paleo Launchpad. I'm Laura Schoenfeld. I'm a registered dietitian with a master's degree in public health.
And I'm Kelsey Marksteiner, a registered dietitian with a master's in human nutrition and functional medicine.
Thanks for joining us for this week's question and answer session. We'll be answering your questions from the private Q&A section of the forum. So if you have a question about your personal paleo code or about nutrition in general, let us know by submitting your question in the members only area of the forum. And Kelsey and I will do our best to answer it on the next show. And remember, this is just general advice and should not be used in place of medical advice from a licensed professional. So you ready to get started with our first question, Kelsey?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, so this one's for you. I have just finished the 30-day reset, the autoimmune no FODMAPs version. I have also avoided all coconut products and stopped drinking almond milk as carrageenan was definitely bothering me, and I stopped drinking coffee. I have not been drinking bone broth. I have made beef bone broth twice so far, but I didn't like the taste, so I'm going to try making chicken broth this weekend. I have not tried any supplements, and I admit that I've had difficulty sorting out all the different advice in the book and on the website in that area. My IBS symptoms are constipation, bloating, and gas, and they've improved, and I've lost 4 to 5 pounds, but I'm still having some lingering bloating and constipation. I haven't had any energy problems or skin problems, and no new problems have emerged during the 30 days. My question is about the best next step aside from starting to drink bone broth and possibly eat potato starch. I feel I can't really introduce new foods because if I have bloating, I won't be able to tell if it's the food or just an ongoing problem. Thoughts? Thanks in advance for any advice that you can provide.
Okay, so thanks for this great question. And this was pulled from the forum. So it can definitely be difficult to determine what to do if your 30-day reset isn't entirely successful. And it sounds like this person has definitely had some improvements. You know, her constipation, bloating, and gas, they've all improved and she's even lost weight. But her symptoms aren't completely gone, and obviously that's kind of what people are looking for. And I'm kind of curious to know if she feels she's plateaued in terms of her symptoms. This can sometimes be a sign that it's a good idea to move forward anyway, because adding more and more restrictions can sometimes just keep that plateau going or potentially even make symptoms worse over time. So I'd say that if she feels her symptoms really haven't gotten any better or any worse for the last 10 to 14 days, then she might, you know, just be best off moving forward with her reintroduction. But she does bring up a good point, which is that this can become really difficult because she won't be sure if a food is causing an issue or if it's just kind of an ongoing problem that she kind of experiences on a daily basis. In this case, I might suggest a little bit different of a strategy. If she does choose to move forward, she might just want to extend the period of reintroduction. And what I mean by that is, for example, let's say she's reintroducing butter. I'd say she might be better off consuming a normal portion of butter for 3 to 4 days versus the recommended 1 day in the normal reintroduction period, and keeping track of her symptoms over those days. I say that because it sounds like her symptoms really aren't consistent. And again, that's just kind of what I'm picking up on from her post, and that may not be true. But if it are, you know, if it is and they're really not consistent, then she might do better off kind of with this extended reintroduction period where she's spending 3 to 4 days in a row, you know, reintroducing one food and then taking a couple days off and seeing if there's any difference. So perhaps she gets bloating sometimes and she, you know, she's not really sure why, or maybe she's constipated for a day or so and then it goes away. There's really no consistency in terms of her symptoms, but she knows she gets these symptoms on a regular basis. By extending the time she takes to reintroduce a food to longer than just that 1 day, she might be able to tell if it makes a difference in her symptoms a little more easily. I will say that, you know, I think she should stick with the low FODMAP approach a bit longer and not try to reintroduce those just yet. And that's because a low FODMAP diet can really, really help with bloating, gas, and constipation, all those kind of IBS-related symptoms. And it sounds like it has worked for her, but she wants to see more improvement. Eventually, she'll want to start by reintroducing some of the be careful foods on the FODMAP list, which I'll link to here. And then finally, trying some of the avoid category foods, though she may not be able to tolerate them at that point, and that's perfectly fine. It's really just a matter of figuring out which one she can and cannot tolerate down the road. The other option here is to extend the reset, which is a perfectly valid option. If she feels she hasn't plateaued, she's making consistent progress, and she wants to see if she can feel even better before moving on to the reintroduction phase, it might be a good idea to give herself, another 15 days or so, or potentially just do a whole new 30-day reset. Kind of making this into a 60-day reset, which is perfectly, perfectly fine. I think people get really stuck on the 30-day reset, that number, because, of course, the reset is really hard, and we don't want to do it much longer than 30 days. But for a lot of people that, have pretty significant issues, extending that 30-day period can be really useful. So if you're someone out there who has some pretty significant health issues, and after 30 days, you're not quite where you think your baseline might be, and you want to get there before you start reintroducing some of these foods back in, definitely consider extending your reset. That's perfectly fine. So I think it definitely sounds like she's on the right track here, since a lot of her symptoms have gotten better. But let's explore if there's any areas she could potentially improve on her second go-around of the reset diet or her extension of the reset diet. My first thought is people on a low FODMAP diet sometimes don't think about the portion size when it comes to foods that are lower in FODMAPs, but that at bigger portion sizes, the FODMAPs add up pretty quickly. So this is mostly true with fruits and fructose. Someone on a low FODMAP diet, they're trying to keep their fructose intake low, and generally someone with fructose malabsorption can handle up to 3 grams of fructose in a sitting. So that's where we want to cut off their fructose intake. Now, if you look at the low FODMAP list that we'll link to, you'll see, for example, that something like ripe bananas are on the safe list. And what I have my clients do sometimes is cross-reference that list with a list of fruits and their fructose content. And we'll see if we do that. I'll link to both of these worksheets. We'll see that if you look at both of them, that a medium banana, it's on the safe list, but it also has 7.1 grams of fructose, which is definitely over that 3 gram fructose limit that we kind of want to stick to if someone's FODMAP intolerant. So even though bananas are on the safe list for a low FODMAP diet, you can see how someone could get themselves into trouble even if they're following that list. So, if I set my client loose with the low FODMAP list and they come back to me saying that, kind of what this woman is saying here, that they got a lot better, but that they're not entirely better, we then go on to make sure that they're not eating too much fruit at one sitting. So, one of the biggest examples here is sometimes I'll give that list to a client and they'll come back to me saying, oh, I incorporated fruit smoothies in the morning with all the safe fruits. And all of the, if they did a lot of those together, like strawberries and, banana and, a couple other different fruits, they could very, very easily get over that 3 gram limit. So it's pretty common. I don't have to do it with everyone. Sometimes just following that basic safe list is enough. But if after, they try it out and they're still having some problems, we will definitely take a look at their fruit intake to see if that's something that we need to take a look at and alter in their diet. So we put that limit of 3 grams of fructose per sitting, if that's the case, if they're having problems still. And I'll say that doing that generally gets pretty much everybody to where they want to be in terms of their symptoms. So since this woman is still having some gas and bloating issues, I'd highly recommend seeing if she's eating over that 3 gram limit of fructose per serving, and then try to reduce it if she is. Now, just as an aside, that 3 gram limit is just what most people with fructose malabsorption can handle, but some can handle a little more, some a little bit less. So you kind of need to experiment somewhat from there, but that 3 gram limit is a very good starting place. I also think that, it's a pretty good idea for this woman to introduce some bone broth into her diet, since that's a very gut healing food. She said she didn't like the beef broth, so definitely trying the chicken broth, which she plans to do. is a really good idea, and you know, kind of just see how it goes. She can introduce that broth into soups, stews, and sauces. So, you know, if she can't, even if she doesn't like the chicken broth either, it doesn't necessarily mean that she has to just drink the broth straight. I mean, even I don't really like drinking broth straight, so I definitely incorporate it into other things like soups or sauces. So try to get creative with that if you don't love the taste of bone broth. I'd also probably hold off on the resistant starch or the potato starch that she's considering adding at this point, just because it might make her bloating a little bit worse in the beginning when she first starts that. So it's something I'd hold off on for now, but it's definitely something that she could play around with down the road. And instead of that, if she's not already on one, which since she hasn't kind of experimented with the supplements, I'd add a probiotic at this point as well. And then finally, if after reducing the fructose content of her diet and giving herself a little more time on the reset, if she's still having some problems, I'd consider going to someone familiar with functional medicine and, you know, getting some tests done, like a stool test and testing for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. You just want to make sure that there's nothing bigger underlying the issues, like a bacterial imbalance. Because if there is, there's a lot you can do to fix it, and it might really help your symptoms as well. So I hope that helps. It can be a little daunting to decide to extend your reset period because, like I said, most people are stuck on that 30 days because it's tough to do and nobody wants to extend it, but it can be very worth it if you decide that, you know, you really want to kind of get a little bit better before you start reintroducing some other things.
Yeah, I think those are really good suggestions. And something I might add is that sometimes people that do the autoimmune paleo and low FODMAPs, they tend to possibly go overboard with avoiding either carbohydrates in general or fibrous foods. So vegetables, obviously fruit would probably be more troubling than certain vegetables, but I found that a lot of people, especially dealing with the constipation issue, they limit their vegetable intake so much that they just don't have anything to bulk the stool up necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to find, you know, appropriate carb and fiber sources that don't cause the bloating or the gas or the constipation the way that the FODMAP types do. And to really make sure you're not just cutting out all plant foods because you're, you know, potentially just overwhelmed with determining which ones are FODMAPs. And
right.
So I usually like to give my clients a list of the foods that are good to be eating to continue getting enough just fiber, and even carbohydrates sometimes can be helpful because, you know, if you're not feeding the bacteria at all, then there may not be any movement there either. So
So this FODMAP list that we'll link to, basically it splits everything up into safe, be careful, and avoid. So if you're, you know, on a low FODMAP diet, definitely, I basically just tell people to follow that safe list. And then from there, you know, you want to vary it up as much as possible and kind of eat as many of those things as you can, especially on the vegetable side of things. Like we've talked about, you can get into a little bit of trouble with going a little crazy on even the safe fruits, but the vegetables, I mean, you're good to go.
Yeah.
So that's a really good point, just kind of making sure that even though it's a low FODMAP diet, there's still plenty of things you can eat in terms of plant matter.
Right. So I'd suggest that this person, you know, check that list out and go through the safe foods and see if she can, he or she, I always say she, but...
It is a she, actually.
Oh, okay. So see if she can... you know, reintroduce some of those foods that maybe she hadn't been eating, and you know, maybe try to bulk up the plant components of her diet in general.
Yeah, definitely. I also just, you had mentioned something about how, you know, kind of doing the autoimmune diet and the low FODMAPs can be very restrictive, and made me think, I mean, she didn't tell us why she's doing the autoimmune protocol. I mean, I assume it's because she has an autoimmune disease, but I'd be curious to hear which autoimmune disease that is, because as we've talked about in the past, I think that sometimes people go to the autoimmune disease protocol when it's really not warranted, and especially if you're starting off your 30-day reset with the autoimmune protocol, it's not necessarily something I usually recommend personally. FODMAPs definitely, I think, you know, if there's a lot of bloating and gas, and especially since she has IBS here, you know, I'm perfectly fine with her going on a low FODMAP reset. But the autoimmune protocol, potentially, you know, if I was working with her before she started this 30-day reset, depending on which autoimmune condition she has, I would, you know, potentially tell her to just start off with the low FODMAP reset and kind of forget about the autoimmune protocol for now. That's always right. Something we can try later.
Right, and I think it's important that if you haven't been diagnosed with an actual autoimmune disease and you just, you know, want to do a more, you know, intense 30-day reset, I wouldn't necessarily just jump to the autoimmune mm-hmm. protocol just because it is, you know, additionally restrictive and it may not be necessary. I do know that a lot of people that have diagnosed leaky gut can improve using the autoimmune protocol because yeah. some foods that they include are, you know, potentially not great to be eating if you do have leaky gut. But again, I think that, you know, if you're kind of just trying this out and you have IBS, but you don't have an autoimmune disease and you don't necessarily have diagnosed leaky gut, I feel like it's, like you said, it's a little bit too much to just throw all of these things in at once and,
right.
You know, eliminate all these different foods that you're not even sure are going to be helpful. So I think if you've gotten tested for sensitivities and, you know, they have really good lab testing that can show what food sensitivities come up, and it shows things like eggs or something like that, that would be, you know, prudent to avoid, then yeah, sure. You know, you don't have to have an autoimmune disease to eliminate those foods, but, right. I think if it's just personal experimentation, then going, you know, totally into this super restrictive diet from the beginning is not necessarily required for most people.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, if she's not completely sure that the autoimmune protocol has helped, because at least from what she's said here, I would imagine that it's mostly coming from, you know, just mainly going paleo plus going low FODMAP that's really given her the benefits that she's seen so far. I mean, she could kind of extend her 30-day reset where she stays with the low FODMAP 30-day reset protocol, but kind of gives up on the autoimmune part and reintroduces those just to see if any of those are really causing any issues. And if not, you know, I mean, I really would keep them in just because, I mean, that's a pretty restrictive diet. So we want you to really be eating as much as possible. And if there's no reason to be taking those out, then, you know, I think it's something you can kind of put off to the side for now.
Yeah, and certainly adding it on top of a low FODMAPs diet is pretty intense to start with. So certainly there's some people that would benefit from that, but I don't necessarily think you want to start there.
Right, totally, I agree. All right, so ready to move on, Laura?
Yeah, and this question is sort of related, so you know, I'll just kind of go over the answer, but you and I will discuss it together.
Sounds good. All right, here it is. Today I went with my mother and grandmother, along with my niece, shopping. We decided to stop and eat. I was extremely hungry and ordered the only gluten-free item on the menu called Summer Harvest Salad. It said it contained berries, toasted coconut, mushrooms, etc., with a honey Dijon mustard that said it was gluten-free. I asked the waitress before ordering what types of oils they used, and she replied that it was a mixed vegetable oil akin to canola oil. I ordered a chicken breast on the side. I also had a couple of French fries. I didn't eat but two bites of the dressing and discovered that the salad also contained a small amount of green and red bell peppers. So I guess I just need to know, what should I do? I'm on the autoimmune protocol and I know that I pretty much cheated. Should I start over, add a week, add a day? Thanks to all who take the time to reply. I'm a little discouraged right now.
Okay, so the reason why I picked this question is mainly because of the sentiment that this person had at the bottom, where she says she's discouraged and she doesn't know what to do, and also where she said, I know that I pretty much cheated. First, I wanted to try to address that feeling, just because I think that during the 30-day reset, you really have to be gentle with yourself and not take it so seriously and take it so, you know, hard when you either make a mistake, or if you're in a pinch, like this woman was, where she didn't have anything else to get and she was really hungry, and you know, she did the best that she could in the situation that she was in. So when that kind of stuff happens, I don't want people to be feeling guilty or discouraged or upset because they, you know, went off the protocol. And honestly, from what she's saying, as far as what she ate, I think she did a really good job of finding something that was pretty close to, you know, what would be allowed on the 30-day reset. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the vegetable oil is probably not going to be a great option, but, you know, from two bites of it, I'm sure that it would not necessarily be a huge deal. You know, the French fries are probably cooked in that same oil, and then also potatoes are not autoimmune protocol, you know, safe. And then also the red and green bell pepper, those are, you know, also not allowed on the autoimmune protocol. So, you know, the few slip-ups that she had at this meal were not anything crazy. So I don't want her to feel bad about herself, or, you know, feel like she's just completely blown it and, you know, ruined all the progress she's made so far. So all of that said, I would say that, and, you know, Kelsey, I'd like to hear your opinion too, but I would say that as far as what this woman should do to, you know, move forward, there's a couple of things that are going to play into the decision that she should make. So first, she needs to figure out if she felt like she had a reaction to that slip up. So, you know, maybe she had a couple of bites of these foods and the next day had a lot of joint pain, or had a, you know, skin flare, if she has a skin issue, or, you know, any number of symptom exacerbations, depending on what her personal disease is. But so if she did have one of these flares, then she's probably going to need to add a little bit of time to her 30-day reset to kind of allow that to subside. I don't think she has to start over. I don't know what day she's on, but say she's on day 20. I don't want her to, you know, completely throw out the 20 days that she's already done. I mean, maybe if she's on day 2, then okay, fine, start over. You haven't lost that much time. But I think in general, if she just allows herself a few days of a, you know, an adherence to the autoimmune protocol and allows her body to kind of get over the symptoms or get over the inflammation that so-called cheat caused, then, you know, she should be back on track and she shouldn't have to worry about, you know, having to add a ton of time to the end of her reset period. That said, if she ate those foods and didn't feel like it caused any serious issues, then I would say that, you know, try to prepare for those situations in advance for the next time, but also don't worry about necessarily extending the reset that significantly, or if at all, because, you know, if you didn't feel like you had any symptoms that came up after eating those foods, I don't think you ate enough that it's going to cause anything major to happen unless you're super sensitive to those foods. But, you know, if you didn't feel like there was any symptom exacerbation after eating those foods, I would say that your sensitivity to them is probably not that high, that it's that big of a deal that you slipped up. And so in that case, you know, you either can just continue on with your current schedule, or maybe just add a couple of days if you really feel like you need to make up for that, that specific meal that wasn't compliant with the autoimmune protocol. So I don't want people in general that are doing this reset to be, you know, super terrified of going out and leaving the house and eating, you know, in other places besides their kitchen. I know it can be really hard, especially if you're on a super restrictive diet like the autoimmune protocol or any of the other restrictive subsets of the 30-day reset. So, you know, it's going to be hard to find food when you're out. But if you have, you know, a situation like this where you're in a pinch and you really need to just eat something, and you do your best to find something that's as close as you can to what what your protocol is, then I would try not to worry about it too much. Don't let it discourage you, and don't let that affect your emotions in a negative way, because the stress of worrying about this kind of stuff is probably just as bad for you as eating a couple of bites of bell pepper and potato.
Yeah, I'm really happy you brought up that point. I was just gonna say that. I think this is a pretty common thing that happens to people if they do, you know, kind of slip up on whatever program they're doing, where, you know, it kind of ruins their whole day, if not their, you know, their whole week or something, where they're just kind of fixated on it, you know, the fact that it happened, and, you know, they're kind of more hyper vigilant for symptoms. And sometimes that can even just cause symptoms in and of itself, because if you look hard enough for anything, I'm sure you can find something. So I think the really important thing here is to just make sure that if it happens, you know, your attitude is right, which should be something along the lines of, all right, you know, I really could have prepared better, and next time I will prepare a lot better for this kind of situation. But this time I didn't, and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it other than prepare better in the future. There's nothing I can do to change the past or what happened, so I might as well just, you know, I fell down, get back on the horse. Like, that's all you can do. And right. I think when you have that attitude, the stress, and, you know, as this person talked about, they're feeling really discouraged, all those kinds of feelings just fall away, because they're not worth your time. And I think that's really, really important to think about when something like this happens.
Right. And I do feel like, especially in this case where it was a very, very small slip up, it wasn't like she went out and right. had like pizza or something, which is, you know, a combination of all the, you know, worst foods for the autoimmune protocol. I just feel like the amount of stress that it seems like this is causing her, as far as feeling bad about herself or feeling that she, you know, ruined her progress, I just feel like that could potentially be more of an issue than the food was. So like Kelsey was saying, just, you know, try to prepare in advance, try to make the best decisions you can when you're out of the house, but don't allow these kind of situations to really affect your perspective on, you know, the amount of work you're doing and the, you know, the changes you have made already. And, you know, I feel like the positive attitude is a really important component of a good healing protocol. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're, as long as you're staying positive and just doing your best, then I think that's all you can really expect to do. And, you know, don't expect to be perfect. Don't freak out when you make mistakes or, you know, make choices that aren't 100% ideal, and just try to, you know, try to appreciate the amount of work you're already putting in. Try to appreciate the amount of effort and, you know, the improvements that you've already made to your diet, and don't get too overworked when you miss the mark even by a little bit like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with what you said in terms of how to deal with this type of situation. I think that it was small enough here that it shouldn't make a huge difference for her. I mean, if she's really sensitive, it possibly could have caused some symptoms. So it's really up to her to, you know, just make sure, or I guess not make sure, but determine if this slip up caused any symptoms to flare up. And if so, then yeah, I agree. Just take a couple days, you know, just take as long as you need to kind of get back on your feet, and then continue with however many days you had left of your reset from there. If it didn't cause any problems whatsoever, then yeah, I think, you know, potentially you could just keep going and just do your 30 days as planned. Either way, you know, it's up to the person. So if you're out there and you're listening to, and you had a different kind of situation where, you know, you slipped up and maybe it caused you a lot of symptoms or no symptoms, you just have to really check in with yourself and see which, you know, where you fall on that spectrum in terms of your symptoms being flared up at all by what you ate. And then just make a smart decision based on that. You know, it should be kind of common sense, where if it was a really terrible reaction, then maybe, yeah, you need to take a little more time to get back on your feet. Whereas if it was really nothing, you might not need any time at all.
Right. So those, I think that's, you know, a really good way to look at it for this person. So hopefully she'll listen to the question and feel a little better about the events as they transpired.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Anyway, so that's getting to the end of our time. So I hope everyone's enjoying these question and answer sessions. And we would really love if people would submit questions in the private section of the forum that's just for personal Paleo Launchpad members. So make sure you're taking advantage of your membership, because, you know, you're getting access to us, whereas the rest of the forum doesn't get to ask us questions. So we'd love if you would submit questions to us through that method. And we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you on next week.
All right. Take care, Laura.
You too, Kelsey.